This is an interview with Lillian Seibel, tribal council member of the Southern Ute Nation, who now lives in the city of Ignacio, Colorado. This interview is being conducted on October 19th, 1991, at the home of Lillian Seibel. The interviewer is Larry Albert Gooden, representing the Center of Southwest Studies, Fort Lewis College, Durango, Colorado.
My name is Lillian Irene Weaver Seibel. I was born February the 2nd, 1941, at the Taylor Hospital in Ignacio, Colorado. My parents are Joseph Buck Weaver and Ruby Taylor Garcia. I am the great-granddaughter of the last known chieftain, Buckskin Charlie. My grandmother is Euterpe Taylor, who served as a tribal councilwoman. I don't know exactly the years, but I think it was back in the 50s. As a small child, I was raised with my father, Joseph Buck Weaver, and his new wife after him and my mother divorced. He married a Nona Norris Weaver, and they bore two children, two sons. So I have two stepsons and a half-brother. Growing up as a young child, my worst memories are having to be split from my parents. My sister, I have one sister, Arlene Weaver Millage, and she lived with my mother and I lived with my father. And so her and I didn't have too much contact because of the way my parents divorced. It was not a very nice divorce. So they kept us children away, sisters away from each other. So I grew up in a more traditional kind of a family where my father and his wife spoke mainly the Ute language. And when I went to live with them, I didn't know any Ute. I knew mostly English, and so I had to survive, and I more or less picked it up, and that's how I came to understand the Ute language. Otherwise, I wouldn't know the Ute language. But it was real funny because my parents would talk, my father and his wife would talk in Ute, and they'd ask me questions, and I knew what they were talking about, but I'd always answer them in English. I went to school at the Ute Vocational Indian School for my elementary and mid-school years, from the K through the ninth grade. And then when the schools consolidated, the public school and the Indian school, back in 1956, I was more or less forced then to attend the public school. The first year that the school consolidated, I was in the ninth grade, and I went to the school. I remember I went to the public school down there. They told me I was going to have to go, and that was the year that I came to live with my mother, and so they felt that I should attend the public school rather than the Indian school. Mm-hmm. And I went to school there, and I was in class about a week when I decided that I didn't want to be there, and so without telling my mother, I went back to the Indian school. And so I was going to school at the Indian school. And then the next year, my 10th grade year, it was the Indian school was eliminated, and so I was more or less forced to go to the to the public school. But I don't know why I didn't like the public school. It was just that it was a new setting, and my old friends were back at the Indian school.
Reason,
and
right?
So I went. But the things that I can remember about growing up in a traditional kind of a way is that at the time that my father and his wife, and there was an elderly woman, my stepmother's mother, Annie Norris Carl, that lived in the household with us. And at the time, she taught me all the traditional kinds of things that a woman should know, like tanning the buckskin, beading, making the cradle boards, going and picking berries, drying the berries, how to jerky the meat, you know, all those kinds of things. And I felt real bad because I was the only girl amongst many boys, because we had some relatives that lived close by the weavers, and they had nothing but sons. And so I was the only girl amongst all those boys, and I wanted to do boys' things, but they wouldn't let me. And so as a result, I didn't want to learn all these other kinds of things that my step-grandmother was trying to teach me. And so I kind of rebelled. But now I can appreciate those things, because I know, and we'd go out and pick a lot of wild herbs and use them. But at that time, you know, I thought it was mean of them to keep me in and do all these other kinds of things. But I now, as I look back, I realize that she was trying to teach me about, you know, their culture and about our traditions. And I can appreciate that now, but at that time I didn't.
Kids.
Growing up in attending the public school, or BIA school in the beginning, at first it was kind of difficult, you know. We had a lot of Indian teachers and stuff, but I liked the Indian school. I know a lot of people say a lot of bad things about their experiences in Indian schools, but mine wasn't that bad.
Good.
There were some teachers that, I remember one of my fifth grade teachers that were kind of mean, you know, he was kind of mean, but other than that, they were there to teach us. They were there to teach us history.
Okay. You were at the school, and the mean teacher.
Oh, and we had some pretty mean teachers, but my experiences in the Indian school were basically okay, except for that one. You know, one teacher. Of course, a lot of the teachers.
Can you remember any incidences of trouble with the teachers or other students?
Well, from what I can remember is that one time we had a substitute teacher come in, and the students gave this teacher a really, really bad time. And so that was the substitute teacher they gave a really bad time. So then when this the regular teacher came back, and he found out what had happened, and that this one boy had threatened the teacher, he just grabbed that student, and he literally picked him up and threw the student against the blackboard. And it was scary, you know, when you're little, you think, oh, but that sticks in my mind a lot.
How old were you at that time? What grade?
I don't know. I was in the fifth grade.
Fifth grade?
But after that, nobody else mm-hmm. got out of the line. They knew better the next time. But, another experience that I know. My experiences in the public school were a lot different. At first, I was really afraid to be there, really intimidated by the non-Indian kids. But I made friends real easily, and after that, and my best friends were two Anglo girls, so we hung out together.
What were their names?
Helen Smith and Bonnie Smith.
Were they sisters?
No, they were cousins.
Oh.
They were cousins. Helen was my best friend. Mm. That's probably because we were cheerleaders. But most of my friends were the Anglo kids, and we got along real well. I don't think that I did as well as I should have going to high school, because there was so much to do and so much fun to have. But I think I learned the basics enough to get by.
Do you have any memorable teachers in high school, in the public high school, that were helpful? Counselors or anything like that?
I don't think we had any counselors at that time in the high schools. We didn't have any counselors. Or maybe they did, but I just never knew of them. No, I don't think they had any counselors. But you had individual counselors that you could go to, mm-hmm. like teachers, mm-hmm. that you could go to if you had problems. But I think the only counselor that we had was the principals of the school.
Uh-huh.
So go in and talk to them if you had any problems.
So what did you do right after graduation from high school?
Oh, I went to business school in Albuquerque
for about
2 years. Then I came back and worked for the tribe in the accounting department.
What was the name of that business school?
Drons Business School.
Drons? So would you spend, 2 years there?
Yeah, about a year and a half. I was studying accounting.
Hmm. Okay. So you became an accountant or a bookkeeper, huh?
Yeah, bookkeeper with the tribe.
With the tribe.
But it was really hard too at that time. Being a young person, coming back and wanting to get a job with your own tribe. And I interviewed for this position, and the top person in that department really didn't want to hire me, and she was a tribal member too.
It's okay.
Yeah.
What was her name?
Her name was Thelma Kubler.
Kubler. Never heard of that person.
Well, she was the finance officer for the tribe.
Mm.
But what I did then was I, as a young person, appealed the decision to the tribal council.
Ooh.
And so I told them that they should give me a chance to prove myself. And at that time, they thought that I was really young and irresponsible, and that I was only going to be there for a short term, and then I was going to leave and go do other things. But I told them that I would at least, if they hired me, and that was her concern too, is that I wasn't really serious about the job, and that she didn't feel that I would stay there long enough and that they'd have to hire again. So I decided that I would say that I would stay for 5 years.
And you did stay.
And I did stay for 5 years. And then in 1967, I decided that I needed to do more, and I left and went to Fort Lewis College.
Fort Lewis College. Did you graduate from Fort Lewis? Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, I was up there for 5 years, and then I left. Oh. I didn't get my degree then, though.
Oh.
I left. And I finally got my degree in 88.
Oh, you did, huh?
Yeah.
From Fort Lewis?
From Fort Lewis.
All right. That's what we like, that second try, huh?
Yeah.
Do you have any recollections of Fort Lewis College? Any instructors that really helped you or anything like that?
The one person that I think that really helped me a lot at that time was Buford Wade. He was in charge of the Intercultural Center at that time. And he was really concerned about Indian students and about them doing well in college. And so he was really, really kind of an inspiration, I think, to Indian students. And I also, I was taking, and when I went to high school, they didn't give, you know, their classes, you just kind of go through classes, like math classes and that. So I didn't really concentrate too much on my algebra. And then when I got to college and I had to take my algebra, I really had a difficult time. And Lee Briggs, who is now the education director for the Southern Tribe, was the teacher for algebra.
Oh.
And so he's the one then who helped me through my algebra class. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't have made it. But he had a way of explaining things to you so that you could understand what he was talking about. That's what I liked about him. And then he worked with Buford Wade. And then he eventually became the director of the Interculture Center, too. But when I was at Fort Lewis also, the Indian Club was real active. And that I think that there is when I really learned to appreciate my Indian side of me, because there I could dance and I could dress up and I could do this, and nobody was there to make fun of you, you know, which I felt, you know, like within your own tribe, if you're a half-breed, you know, people tend to criticize you. And so when I went to Fort Lewis, there was none of that, because everybody was the same and everybody danced and everybody helped one another. And they had a really strong intercultural group there. And the center for, the center there really helped the Indian students also. And so while I was there, I was able to travel during the summers. I went to Black Hill State College.
Oh, really?
And then I also went to a Indian youth camp up in Manoman, Minnesota. Manoman, Minnesota. It was called Indian Circle. So I went there and met a lot of young, educated people who now have gone on and done real well. Well, one of the ladies who was the director, she just died not too long ago, and she was a she was just 2 months before she died, she was to have received her, let's see how her name is, Ann Rayner, and she was supposed to have received her doctorate. She was going to become Dr. Ann Rayner, and she died of cirrhosis of the liver, and her family didn't even know that she had a problem with alcoholism. And see, when her brother now is a consultant, and he goes around talking about the effects of alcoholism, and he uses this, he talks about this story with his sister, because he says, what a waste, you know, and there, he thought they had a real strong family connection, and that she didn't even tell them about her problem until it was too late.
That's sad.
But that's one I remember. Another teacher at Fort Lewis, my art teacher, I think, Stanton Englehart.
Huh? He should be recording.
He is recording. Yeah, Stanton Englehart.
Who's Stanton Englehart? I've never heard that name.
Yeah, he taught art up at Fort Lewis College.
He did.
For years, he just retired about 2 years ago. And but he was one of my art teachers, and then he it was real funny. I didn't understand this, you know, like he said, what grade do you think that you deserve? What grade do you want? What grade do you think you deserve? And that was really kind of a shock to me. I don't know. You told all the students to grade themselves, and if he thought, you know, he'd sit down and talk with them. And I thought that was kind of neat. Another teacher that really, really, I still think of him as this. His name was Howard. What was his first name? I can't even think of his first name. But he was a speech English teacher. And I remember my first year at Fort Lewis, I was so timid and so shy and so this and so that. So I decided, well, speech was required. It was a required course. And so students were always saying, take Howard's class, take Howard's class. It's really easy. He's real nice. You know, he's real funny. And this. So I took his class. And he was a great teacher. But I'd sit in the back, and he'd make everybody get up in front of the class. So he knew I was a Southern Ute, and he'd tell me, okay, you Southern Ute Pocahontas, get up here. I'd say, oh no, and he'd bring me up there, and then I'd have to get up in front of the class. But I appreciate that now, because he just helped me over that hump. And so in the end, you know, we were real good friends. And I appreciated him too, because he would knit. He was a man, and he'd be knitting. Mm-hmm. He'd be knitting like little baby clothes for his grandkids and stuff. And he'd always been, he was a good knitter. And people would make fun of him. But, you know, he was a good, and I appreciate that, because my grandmother is a good craftsperson. She knits and she crochets. And
how did you come to know that he knits?
He did it in class.
Really?
And he'd take his little bag, and he'd be knitting. Every spare time he had, he'd be knitting. And I'd say, what's this for? And he'd say, oh, it's for my grandkids, after his daughter or son got married.
Interesting.
But he was a neat, neat man. And many, many students appreciated him. But he was one that I can remember that we had a lot of fun. And he was bald-headed, so I'd tell him, I'd say, if you keep on picking on me, I'm going to scalp you. I'm going to scalp what hair you have left, because just around the edge. We had a good joke, though. But in the end, and I was so sad when I read in a paper after he retired that he had passed on. And, but he was a person that I remember that influenced my life. Another...
Okay. Well, why don't we just move along then? And so now you had that accountant's job, and you've been to Fort Lewis. How did you come to be on the tribal council? And then you mentioned a job with the KSUT radio as the manager.
Well, after I had gotten out of after I had left Fort Lewis College, it was during the summertime, I decided I'd take a job with the Bureau of Indian Affairs.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked with them with the environmental health as a part-time position. It was a temporary job during the summertime. And while I was there, I kept hearing that they were looking for people to train so that they could start up this radio station, non-profit radio station. And so while I was working, I kept hearing it, and I'd call up the place, have you received any applications yet? And they'd say, no, nobody's applied. And I thought, well, that'd be kind of exciting, that'd be kind of challenging, because it was for educational radio, non-profit educational radio. So I thought, well, I was studying to be a teacher, and I thought, well, that was along my line, so I thought, well, why not try? you know, and they said, well, they would train you and everything. So I decided, well, my job there with the BIA was going to be over, so I'd go ahead and apply. So I submitted my application, and so I was one of five people that were, you know, that were hired. And so we trained, and I ran, then I decided to run the station for 5 years. It was started out as a 10-watt nonprofit educational radio station. And then while I was working there in, I think it was 79, 90, 80, is when I decided then, well, maybe I want to do something else. And then I always wanted to become a, you know, try being a council member. Uh-huh. And so I thought, I listened to the candidates that were running, and I thought, well, if these people are running, you know, I have just as much chance as they do, and, you know, I think that I could make it. So at that time, there were no women on the tribal council, and I decided that I would use that as my platform, that I wanted to be the representative for the female of the tribe. And that's the ticket that I ran on, and I won.
All right.
I was surprised. I won, and so I've been on the council ever since then. This is my fourth 3-year term.
Wow.
So
that's impressive.
So next year, in 1992, I will have served 12 years.
So, are there any significant types of decisions that were made while you were on the council that you are interested in? Things that you find useful for the people?
One of the concerns that, primarily the concerns that I've been really strongly attached to our like education. The tribe decided that at one time they adopted a proclamation that education was their number one priority, and I think that the tribe has moved forward in that direction. We have this new education learning center that we remodeled a building. We bought property in town. We remodeled this building and made it into an education learning center.
Ooh.
And now they've started a preschool, you know, with it for people. See, we have a preschool center here in Ignacio, but that is for low-income children. Now, there's some who are over the limit, you know, over income. So yep. For those kids, they decided, well, we would open this up, and everybody can go, not just tribal members, but non-tribal kids can attend it.
All three cultures. Mm-hmm. Super.
Mm-hmm. And then in the summertime, they have summer school, and kids can go there for improving their skills. Maybe they needed some help in reading, maybe math, to understand math concepts and that. And they can go and they can get tutoring. This summer, they didn't think they'd have that many kids, but they were overwhelmed with the amount of kids that showed up. And the kids were excited. They did a lot of hands-on kinds of things. And they were on TV.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the Channel 6 came out and covered it.
About how many students showed up this summer?
I think there was about 90 to 100 kids that came.
That many? Wow. Mm-hmm. Really successful.
Mm-hmm. They were really happy with it. And so now, I don't know how many kids are attending now, but I think they have 12 to 13 students that are attending the preschool.
Great.
And then my other interest is in alcoholism and drug abuse. You know, and I've been real supportive of those kinds of programs. And
Is there a large alcohol and drug abuse situation in the Ignacio area as opposed to years ago?
In the days that I can remember, now I'm going to go back to when I was growing up as a young child. When I lived with my father was a rancher, farmer and rancher, and many of the people on the reservation were farmers and ranchers. They grew their hay and oats and alfalfa and all that, you know, and they shared equipment with one another. They helped each other. Yes. Those people that lived right next to each other, they harvested all their crops together. And then in 1950, in the 50s, early 50s sometimes, when the tribe first received their claims case award, I think it was over $8 million. Mm. Then the individuals...
1951?
I don't know. It was sometime then.
Okay.
It was in the 50s, I know.
Mm-hmm.
And then they gave each family, heads of the family and mm-hmm. each enrolled member. I think they gave them a rehab family plan account of $3,000 a piece.
Yes.
Each enrolled individual.
Uh-huh.
And then they also gave them like $1,000 in per capita payments. So with the coming of those claims case monies, and at that time they used to get a lot of money because the tribe was small then, very small.
Mm-hmm.
And that eroded the people.
Too much wealth at once?
Right. It eroded the farming and ranching. They no longer did that.
Really?
They most of them just let it go because they didn't need to anymore because they were able to buy all, you know, like new vehicles and they just let their farms and ranching go. Some mm-hmm. kept it up, you know, some did well with the monies that they received, but others didn't. A lot of that helped people to become homeowners.
Mm-hmm.
They were able to build their own homes, nice homes.
The ones that did well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, no,
all of them,
because they had their children's monies and theirs.
Oh, yeah.
And those monies were only to be spent on household items, like building homes and, you know, furniture and things like that. No luxury kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
And so they were able, they could buy pickups for their farms, machinery and stuff. Some people, like I said, some families continued with their farming and ranching and became successful at it. Others just let it go. And, and you know, that's when all of the problems with the alcoholism came in. Mostly alcoholism, because drugs at that time were not, you know, mm-hmm. didn't know anything about drugs then, just smoking. But that's when I think, you know, I saw a lot of mm-hmm. alcohol abuse, a lot of child neglect.
Uh-huh.
I think that's when a lot of problems were created.
And how's it today?
Today, it seems like you don't see as many, you know, now that the tribe still gives out dividends
mm-hmm.
every quarter, but you don't see people
going
just
stupid things, yeah, crazy things.
They don't drink as much as they used to.
Good.
And I think they're...
The center called the Peaceful Spirit, how has that played a part in all this, do you know?
I think it's helped some. It's helped some, and it's helped a lot of non-Indian people,
uh-huh.
but I think it's helped some of our people, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have some of our people working there.
Well, let's see. Almost 12 years on the Tribal Council. Any more? Do you plan on more years on the Tribal Council?
I'm at a point where I think that it's time to move on and do other things.
Got anything in mind?
No, I haven't really given it you know, much thought, but I was thinking it probably. I see. You know, we've made progress in some areas, and then there's other areas where I think we've come to a standstill. But I also, I don't know, my being in there for this long, and I see that some of the internal. Mm-hmm. Internal problems haven't been resolved, and what, can't go forward.
What internal problems would these be?
I think internal problems within the organization.
Of the council itself.
No, of the tribe. Of the tribe. Of the organization, the tribal organization.
Tribal organization.
The government. Uh-huh. I'd say. The government.
Okay. Still need more work there, huh?
Yeah.
Do you know of any other? Female youth members who might want to come up and sit on the council?
Well, right now, see, when I first ran, there was none, and I was the only one for 3 years. Now we have two more women. Vida Peabody, who was the tribal council secretary for 14 years before she decided to run for a seat. And just last year, we elected another one, Evelyn Hudson. And she was the, I think, kind of a secretary coordinator for, she worked in the social services department. And so.
Good representation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But our tribe has never had a woman chairperson.
Ah.
Yeah. So.
You think one of these other ladies would be good for that?
I don't know. Being the chairman is a very, very tough position to be in. It's a lot of responsibility. You have to have a lot of administrative skills behind you.
Uh-huh. But you're going to move on somewhere else.
I think I'd like to move on. The man says. It's time to move on.
Harold says it's time to move
on,
huh?
It's time to move on.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, because see, he didn't really want me to get into politics, and I did it on my own.
Uh-huh.
I did it without. I asked him, and he said no, and I did it anyway.
All right. It's here for women.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Now, you say you have a son by the name of Shane.
Mm-hmm.
What's he doing?
When he graduated, he decided to. He went to college a year, and I think he was still too young. He didn't know what he wanted out of life and stuff. And so, then he decided to enroll for the second year. And then, in the meantime, while he was there, this job came up with ARCO Oil and Gas, Atlantic Richfield Oil and Gas.
Uh-huh.
And so he decided to apply for it. And he was selected, and so then he dropped out of college. Of course, he has to pay the money back to the tribe. But he dropped out, and now he's working with them. He just started. He's a permanent employee, a regular permanent employee.
Super.
With them. So
I remember him as a teenager. A kid.
I know. It's hard to believe that he's that old. But eventually, I think that he may go back to school. The company that he works for told him that if he ever decided to go back to school, they would allow him to go back to school, and they would even pay for it, but it has to be in engineering.
Uh-huh.
Any kind of engineering, nothing else.
That's not such a bad requirement.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And we need a lot of young people in those kind of technical areas.
Uh-huh.
You
know? So. Yeah. Now, Shane was with you and Harold,
mm-hmm.
and you have another son,
mm-hmm.
with Joseph. His name was Vicente.
Mm-hmm.
What is Vicente doing?
Vicente. He's working also. He works for Amoco.
Oil company kids, huh?
Yeah, he works with Amoco. He's married. His wife works, Julia works for, Indian Health here in Ignacio. And they have two children, Sunshine and Skylar.
Oh, neat names.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Super. All right. Okay. I was wondering, do you remember any stories about your great-grandfather, Buckskin Charlie, other than the ones in the history book? We know that he was the last principal chief of the Utes.
Mm-hmm.
But did you ever catch any stories from your father?
I wish my father
that you could recall?
Yeah, my father is deceased now, but I don't remember him saying too much about him. I need to ask my grandmother, or maybe my mother, what they knew about.
How about Eutippi Taylor?
Oh, Euterpe?
Euterpe, there you go.
Yeah. She's still living. She's 90. She's going to be 90. Mm-hmm. 92.
Wow.
92. No, 90. She'll be 91. 92, yeah. She'll be 92 years old.
So she was born at the turn of the century?
Yeah, she was born in 1889.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wouldn't that put her over 100 years?
No, it's 90. I think it's... Yeah, because it was 1900, so it was
1899.
Yeah. 1899,
okay.
Yeah, it was 1 year less than 1900.
Okay, that's a good way to remember it.
Yeah, before I used to say 1900, and then my mom said, no, it's 1899, yeah.
Oh. How much interaction did you have as a child with her?
Well, I stayed with them for a while, and all I can remember is that she was a real aggressive woman, a real go-getter.
Mm-hmm.
She was always doing something. She was an avid gardener.
Really?
She loved to garden. She loved to raise flowers. She always, she made us kids get up. That's why I don't like gardening. Harold doesn't know why I don't like gardening. But we'd have to go out and we'd have to pick the weeds, pull the weeds, and she'd make us get out there, the kids get out there. And then we had to help her can, peeling the tomatoes and peeling this. And so that's why my experiences with gardening are not very good. That's what I don't want to do. But we love to eat the food, during the winter time. She always had plenty of food she canned. She was a good canner, and we dried food. I remember her, she always had people coming to visit her, from all over, and she always made sure that she fed them. She would always feed them very good. That was her way.
Mm-hmm.
She, whenever you went to her house, you had to eat.
Do you remember any of these people?
No, they were just, they were just strange people.
People.
And if people needed places to stay, she would always put them up, and they'd always go to her house. But now that she's older, she doesn't like that so much.
I could imagine. Because
but every now and then she still has a lot of people come visit her. But that's what I can remember from her on that side is she was more into the canning and gardening and the cultivating stuff and flowers and baking and crocheting and knitting. She was that craftsperson.
Oh,
this other side was the traditional kinds of side, my mother, on my father's side, where he was into the, he was a Native American religion person.
Really?
Mm-hmm. So he sang the peyote songs, and he had his different kinds of songs. And on this side of my family, they weren't from that.
Were they Christian oriented, or were they tribal? Native oriented?
No, they were more. My grandmother and them were more Christian oriented.
Any particular denomination?
They were Catholic.
Catholic, huh?
Catholic. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you remember any stories from that sort of thing? Did she go to a Catholic school at all when she was a kid, or
I think
mission
in
school?
I think when they the boarding school. See, they sent, they had their whoever came in, the chaplains or priests or whoever came in, you know, to teach them religion. So, but they were more Christian oriented than we were on this side. So that's how come I was never really exposed to Christianity. And then my father, he went to his meetings, you know, with the Native American church, but he never allowed us to go.
Do you practice a denomination right now?
Not really.
How about Harold?
Harold's a Baha'i.
Baha'i? Mm-hmm. What's that?
I don't know. I don't know.
You don't know?
You tell me, Larry.
Sometime when I got a couple of years, I'll tell you about it.
but those are the kinds of things that I remember as a child.
Uh-huh.
Plus, I remember when I lived with my father, then we'd go to the bear dance and the sun dances.
Mm.
We would travel with different families to Utah and Ute Mountain Ute reservations.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I've heard of them.
Yeah, we travel up there. We travel up to the, together in a group, families together.
In cars or car?
We'd usually take a big truck.
Big truck?
A truck.
Oh, great fun.
It was nice, and then we'd camp out up at Ute.